Children's Book Author Illustrators. Many of the finest children's book authors and illustrators make their home in Maine. If you are a parent or grandparent, you've likely shared and even treasured a book by one of these names: Melissa Sweet, Ashley Bryan, Chris Van Dusen, Philip Hose, Annie McDonald, Scott Nash, Matt Tavares, Carol Murray, Jamie Hogan, or Ryan Higgins. And that is just the tip of the iceberg. There are dozens of children's book creators capturing the imagination of young people and their families here. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we talk with award-winning author illustrators about how they come up with their ideas, what kind of impact they hope their books will have, and why children's literature matters. Do you have a favorite children's book? Have you ever tried to write or illustrate one? We'd love to hear from you. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Books play such an important role in a child's life, and certain books have that magic that captures a child's imagination. Today, we'll talk with people behind some of these books about why children's books matter. Joining me in the studio, Chris Van Dusen, author and illustrator of several beloved picture books, including the popular Mercy Watson series. His book, If I Built a Car, won the E.B. White Read Aloud Award, and his newest book, If I Built a School, comes out next week. He lives in Camden. Ryan Higgins is the author and illustrator of the best-selling picture book, We Don't Eat Our Classmates, as well as the best-selling Mother Bruce series. His newest book in that series is out now. It's called Bruce's Big Storm. He has received the E.B. White Read Aloud Award as well and the Ezra Jack Keats New Illustrator Honor, and he lives in southern Maine. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you or your child have a favorite children's book? Have you always wanted to write or illustrate children's books? What questions do you have for Chris and Ryan? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to both of you today. You know, Maine, as you know, has such a long heritage of children's books. I'm thinking about Robert McCloskey and Barbara Cooney with Miss Rumphius, E.B. White, obviously, with Charlotte's Web. Chris, I'm wondering if you are aware of and influenced by that tradition, and if so, how?
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned Robert McCloskey right off the bat, because he is my idol. First of all, thanks for having us here today. This is great. Great to be here. Robert McCloskey is a big influence on my work. My first book, Down to the Sea with Mr. McGee, there's one illustration in the back of the book that's almost like a direct homage to Robert McCloskey's Burt Dow books. And same thing with the Barbara Cooney books. I was lucky enough to meet her once in Damariscotta, and she was just, I mean, for someone to win the Caldecott, what, three times or something like that? I mean, she was amazing. And of course, E.B. White is just, I love his writing as well. So yeah, they definitely influenced my work. Definitely.
Okay. And you know, you mentioned Robert McCloskey and the Burt Dow books. People also really know him for Blueberries for Sal.
Yeah. And if you had to ask me my favorite children's book of all time, I probably would have to say One Morning in Maine. That is just perfect.
Again, okay, Ryan, your turn. Do you feel this heritage when you work here in Maine?
Yeah, absolutely. Also, I want to thank you for having me on the show. I do want to say it's sort of surreal because I listen to the show quite a bit. So if I forget to answer right away, sometimes it's just because I'm in my mind back in my kitchen eating lunch and I'm waiting for the guest to answer.
Stay on track.
Right. I'm a really big E.B. White fan. And more so as I grew up, I recently been reading the essays of E.B. White, and he has a collection of all of his essays that are about dogs, which is that's been fun to read through. And Robert McCloskey, a few years ago I was at the Eric Carle Museum, and they had a big exhibit there where
I saw a bunch
of his original artwork. It was very amazing to walk around and look up close at those.
Yeah.
Okay, so I know you get this question a lot, but I'm still going to ask it. How do you come up with your ideas? Chris, you first.
Well, I get asked, that is the question I get asked the most. And I usually tell people that they come from a bunch of different things, different areas. Sometimes I will get an idea for an illustration first and build a story around it. That's how my first book started, Down to the Sea with Mr. McGee. Sometimes I read things that inspire a book. That happened with The Circus Ship, which is probably my most popular book, because that's loosely based on a true story, and I read about it originally in Down East magazine. But sometimes, you know, you just, these ideas sort of pop in your head and you just have to make sure you have a paper and pencil handy. A lot of times I get ideas early in the morning, like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and I always have to write them down. I also get them when I'm driving, and then I can't write
when
them down.
The
I remember.
You're not driving with a big drawing pad, are you?
No, but you know what? And I've heard this from other people. I wonder if this happens to you, Ryan. I get a lot of ideas in the shower. I know that's a little personal.
No, I don't get a ton of ideas in the shower. I usually get them while I'm sleeping.
Well,
and then I wake up, I think they're good.
But there's
good,
a reason for that, because someone said once the positive or negative ions in the water stimulate your creativity. And I knew a fellow author, and she used to always get ideas in the shower. She actually bought one of those scuba diving pads that you could write on underwater, and she mounted it on her shower wall so she could write down ideas as she got them in the shower.
It's funny you mentioned the middle of the night. I'm laughing because the author Richard Russo was on the program just last week, and one of the callers asked him if he ever got ideas in the middle of the night, and he chuckled and he said yes, and he used to keep a notepad by his bed. He said, but always he'd jot them down in the middle of the night and wake up in the morning, and they were always terrible ideas.
Yeah, I get that a lot too.
Yeah, that happens.
Or it's also, you know, it's hard to write in the middle of the night. I type them on my phone usually.
Okay, but both of you are both author illustrators, correct? So is it the pictures first or the words first?
Well, for me, it's usually the words. I think a lot of author illustrators go the other way. I don't know if that's true for you, Chris.
It sort of kind of goes hand in hand. Like if I'm first sort of laying out a story, I will do like thumbnail sketches.
Sure.
And they're just tiny little scratches, really. But I really have to pace out a story and definitely write the words before I go to any final sketches or illustrations.
Yeah, sometimes I'll thumb through my sketchbook and look through, and something will spark an idea for me.
Okay, well, both of you have new books in the ether. Chris, yours was supposed to come out today, but it didn't happen that way. But tell us about it. It's going to come out next week, correct?
Yeah, it comes out on Tuesday. It's the third of the If I Built books. It's called If I Built a School. It features the same character that's in If I Built a Car and If I Built a House, a boy named Jack. And this time he shows his teacher, a teacher named Miss Jane, through the classrooms or through the features of his dream school. And this is a book that I should have written a long time ago, but I was really reluctant to, because I wasn't sure kids would really want to read about a school. My wife, Lori, kept saying, oh, you should write this book. And I would often go to school visits. When I would go to school visits, I'd come home, and like a few days later in the mail, I'd receive copies of If I Built a School by the students of the school I just visited. Now, this is way before I even thought of writing the book. But like each kid would illustrate a page, a different classroom, a feature of the school, and they'd staple them together or bind them together. And they said, well, it turns out I collected about 10 or 12 copies of If I Built a School, which I still have at home. And Lori said, see, you got to write this book. And so I contacted my agent, and he said, yeah, that's a good idea. So it's a really crazy school. If you think the car is crazy, if you think the house is crazy, wait till you see what Jack comes up in the school.
Okay.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Do the kids that gave you all the ideas, do they get a split of the...
Yeah, I've got them all on my royalties, so I'm just going to like
it. And Ryan, tell me about your new book.
Yeah, so I have an ongoing series about a bear named Bruce, the new book comes out, I think, in September, it's called Bruce's Big Storm. It's about my grumpy old bear, Bruce, and how there's a big storm coming to the neighborhood, and all the woodland creatures from around want to shelter the storm in his house. He's very reluctant to do so because he's a big grump. And while there, he reluctantly allows all the forest creatures to stay in his house. And eventually a tree falls down in the house. And it, I'm not going to give away too much of the ending, but
Leave it there.
The story is about everybody coming together and sort of helping out.
You know, it's funny as you say that. I'm thinking there are certain, no matter what era you live in, what generation, there are certain sort of characters that reemerge in books. And an adult of some sort who's grumpy is one of them,
sure.
Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the name of the guy from Dennis the Menace?
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Wilson. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kind of liken Bruce to Mr. Wilson a little bit.
All right.
As far as, you know, big yeah. heart, but grumpy on the outside.
Mr. McGee's not grumpy. Do you have any grumps?
No, he's just kind of. Mr. Payne in the circus ship. He's okay. A major grump. Yeah.
Okay.
But no, Mr. McGee is just kind of a hapless man boy.
Is that because most children need to deal with somebody grumpy?
I don't know. It took me a few books before I actually put a villain or a grumpy or a negative character in. But I had so much fun,
sure,
with Mr. Payne in the circus ship that when I decided to write a fairy tale, which ended up being called King Hugo's Huge Ego, I thought, well, I wonder if I could write a book where the main character is like a grump right from the get-go. Like, so you start reading this book and you immediately don't like the main character. that was my challenge. Can I do this? And it was fun.
Yeah, for me, the reason my main character is a grump is I wanted, on the outside, he's a grump. And I wanted readers to, as they get to know Bruce the Bear, they find out there's a lot more layers to him. He never changes. He doesn't grow throughout the story, but you find out more about him. So he's just a grump on the outside. He gets into situations that make him grumpy. But after you peel back those grumpy layers, he does have a big heart.
We're talking with Ryan Higgins and Chris Van Dusen, both author-illustrators of very well-loved and award-winning children's books. If you'd like to talk with them, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I know many people in our audience have tried their hand at writing a children's book or have dreamed of writing a children's book. I'm going to ask each of you, Ryan, what tips would you give someone who's been, you know, working an idea around in his or her head?
Sure. I get to ask that question quite a bit. I usually, I tell folks to look into joining their local chapter of the SCBWI, which is the Society for Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. It's a great place to meet other folks who are trying to do the same thing, and the dues that go into it pay to have editors and agents come from big publishing houses, big agencies, and they'll have annual meetings where everyone will get together, and those editors and agents will review the whatever those folks are working on. So it's a great way to get your stuff out there.
I think they also have art directors, too, that will review
portfolios, too.
Yeah.
And for the younger folks out there who want to grow up to have this sort of job, my advice is just, don't give up and keep doing it. I drew all the time as a kid. I made up stories all the time as a kid. And the more stories you make, the more drawings you make, you know, the more practice you get at it. And share it with everyone you know.
Yeah, if you want to be an illustrator, you just have to be able to draw. You just draw all the time. And I tell young kids, you know, if they want to be an illustrator, if they want to be an artist, not only to just draw all the time, but also if they get to a point where they feel comfortable drawing from life. What I mean, like, you know, looking at something and drawing it directly, like going out in the backyard and drawing an apple tree or something like that. There used to be a requirement for RISD, their portfolio, they used to require that you draw your sneaker, which sounds kind of silly, but if you try to draw a sneaker, it's really hard. So that's another way to sort of heighten, you know, strengthen your skills as an illustrator.
Yeah, I wanted to jump back in real quick, if you don't mind. You were talking about drawing from life. Another thing I would suggest is take your favorite cartoons out there and copy them. So I learned to draw by drawing over and over again Calvin and Hobbes, Snoopy, you know, Bugs Bunny, all those classic characters. And, I mean, if you look through my artwork, you can see bits and pieces in there of my influences there. So I draw trees a lot like how Bill Watterson draws trees from Calvin and
Hobbes. Yeah, and that's a good way to learn how to draw, too. It's just a copy. See, I'm way older than you are. We used to copy things out of Mad Magazine.
Pogo? Did you Pogo? Do you remember that?
Pogo, the comic strip?
Comic strip, yeah.
No, I never copied Pogo because those drawings were amazing. But, you know, Don Martin and Mort Drucker from Mad Magazine. God, I love those guys.
So were each of you the kid kind of getting in trouble in the back of class drawing?
Oh, Absolutely.
No, I was a very good kid. Never got in trouble.
All of you who cannot see these illustrators, Ryan has kind of got a twinkle in his eye as he says this. We're going to go to Anna, who's calling from Madrid Township. Hi, Anna. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm listening with my 5 and 7-year-old sons who love both of your books. We were lucky enough to meet Chris Van Dusen at the Wilton Library a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And we've been collecting your stuff ever since. So.
Thanks.
Good to hear you. I also wanted to put a plug in for Melissa Sweet.
Mm. Oh, she's fantastic.
Oh, we love her. Her collage is just, there are so many little details. Now you can look at the same picture again and again and keep finding some new little tidbit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to mention Melissa's work later on. Her newest book, How to Read a Book, that's what it is, by Kwame Alexander. How to Read a Book. She did the whole thing. She not only did the illustrations, but she illustrated all the types. So all the artwork, all the words are all incorporated into the. It's just amazing. It's an amazing piece of work.
I have a humorous story about Melissa Sweet. It's embarrassing only to me.
Okay.
Well, then do tell.
I was on a plane flying back from a conference, and I had never met her before. And she was sitting 2 seats over from me. And having not met her, I didn't know what she looked like. And so there's this lady waving at me for the whole flight. And I was kind of weirded out. And then afterwards, she said, "Hi, I'm Melissa Sweet." And then, of course, I was very apologetic. But
she knew who you were. And, well, that brings up a good question. Do children's book author illustrators in Maine know each other? I mean, you know, the caller who just called is connected to all of you through her children. But have you all met before today?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
Ryan
and I
have
met. Yeah,
yeah. We've met a number of times.
Chris was very influential in the beginning of my career. He was very... I don't know. You were just...
You came to me, wee lad.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yes. And you were very supportive and encouraging and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we do know... I think we do know a lot of people in the business, especially in Maine.
Right.
We used to have a big sort of book festival in Portland years ago run by the Junior League called Blueberries and Moose, and we'd all get together then. But unfortunately, that doesn't happen anymore. But occasionally we'll have... you know, get-togethers and or meet at lunch and
I feel
like
that. A lot of us meet up outside of Maine at conferences.
That's
and stuff.
True.
You run into
that's
someone
true.
Like, I live 45 minutes from you.
Yeah, that's true.
But here we are in Texas meeting.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we'll go to Freddie, who is calling from Searsport. Hi, Freddie. Go ahead.
Hi. I loved children's books, and one that I've always wanted to read to my own grandchildren, and I have 10, but I believe it's perhaps out of print, and I can't find our copy, but it's called The Bear That Wasn't, and the illustrations are all in pen and ink. And what I love about those illustrations, and I love the general idea that I see often in children's books is, basically a bear has fallen asleep in his den, and while he's asleep, they build a factory over his den, and he's trying to get out. And so each, he goes from the manager to the vice president, up, and the pictures are always the same, except each time the bear goes into a higher-up's office, it's just a little fancier.
Yeah.
One has one secretary. If you know the book, you know what I'm talking about.
I have that
book.
Yeah, Freddie, I have that book, and that was one of my favorite books as a kid. And one of the things I loved about that is the bear kept trying to convince the management in the factory that he was actually a bear and not a man in a big fur coat.
No, not a silly old man who needed to shave and wore a fur coat.
Yeah,
sounds like an allegory.
But the great thing about the illustrations in that book was that he would go into different offices and like the district manager would have like one trash can and one secretary. And then it went out to the president, and the president had like 10 trash cans and 10 secretaries. Yeah, that's a great book. I still have a copy of that.
Well, Freddie, thanks so much for calling and sharing. We do need to go to our first quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. We'll also hear from Jamie Hogan. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Waterville Creates, inviting you to Variety, an evening of exceptional entertainment in support of the arts on October 19th. WatervilleCreates.org.
Suicide is a leading cause of death in the United States, but public health officials tread carefully when talking about the link to guns.
I think when you say lethal means to the general public, they don't know what you're saying. They don't know that you might mean guns.
I'm Ari Shapiro. How gun politics affect suicide prevention efforts at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That's this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon between 4 and 6:30 on Maine Public Radio. A big thank you to all of you who took part in Let's Grow Together Summer Membership Drive. Over $250,000 was raised, and we welcomed in over 245 new members in support of Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical. Thanks for doing your part to make public radio possible. Together, we keep this option alive for our communities. Now, if you missed the drive, it's never too late. You can pledge your support anytime, including right now at mainepublic.org. Again, together we got the job done. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are talking with two of Maine's most popular children's book illustrator authors about what they do and why it matters. Joining me, Ryan Higgins is the award-winning author and illustrator of the picture book We Don't Eat Our Classmates and the Mother Bruce series of books. His newest book is Bruce's Big Storm. Chris Van Dusen is the award-winning author and illustrator of several beloved picture books, including the popular Mercy Watson series and If I Built a Car. His latest book, If I Built a School, comes out August 13th. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining me on the line now, Jamie Hogan. She is an award-winning illustrator and educator whose work includes children's books. She has taught at the Maine College of Art and lives on Peaks Island. Thanks for calling in, Jamie.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you. I'm happy to be able to just chime in and say that I'm a big fan of both Chris and Ryan.
Wonderful.
Thanks, Jamie. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good.
You know, I know that you've done a whole lot of different kinds of illustration work. What do you like? What is different about doing children's books?
Well, I think it's, you know, as opposed to doing shorter projects that are like posters for Portland Stage or something like that, you have to sort of dig in pretty deep. And I think that both Chris and Ryan, you know, get that. You know, you have to do a lot of preliminary work, and it's a much longer time frame. And but you do get to know your characters really well. And I love hearing about the bear stories. The last two books I've illustrated have involved a porcupine and an opossum, two critters I had never drawn before or knew anything about. So one thing about illustrating is that I always learn a lot when I'm working on a book, and I'm happy that both of them talked about drawing from life, because that's something that is, I try to advocate for that when I was teaching illustration, because it's something that, you know, kids maybe do like to copy their cartoon characters, but sometimes you do have to just look at a tree.
That's right. That's right.
Sometimes you have to look at a tree. Jamie, do you notice any trends in what's popular or in demand as an illustrator, certain themes or styles?
I think actually right now, I think that I'm noticing a lot more decorative kinds of illustration when I'm seeing things that are on book jackets or surface pattern things. I think that there is a kind of stylization, and I don't know if I want to call it decorative necessarily, but there's a lot more pattern making with the illustration that I'm seeing. I know that a lot of the students that I've had have been interested in, you know, what can I call it? I mean, it's botanical things and leafy things that repeat, and flowers and things like that. I don't know if Chris and Ryan have noticed anything like that when they visit schools, but.
Yeah, I've seen some sort of, I think I know what you're talking about, Jamie, sort of stylized landscapes.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have did some amazing things with like just drawing bushes and trees and land. They're just, yeah, it seems like it's trending away from more naturalistic renderings and more decorative. Yeah, right, more graphic. I see that.
There's a lot of, you can see more graphic design elements.
Yeah, I think that the graphic design element has been becoming more and more prominent, which is not a bad thing. I mean, I think it it makes for striking book jackets and that kind of thing. You mentioned Barbara Cooney, and she's definitely one of my favorites. When I first moved to Maine, it was 1992, and someone gave me Miss Rumphius, which remains one of my top favorite books. And there's something very decorative about how she approaches the lupin fields. And but there is still a certain authenticity to the environment in her books. I mean, there's still the lighting and the landscapes are still really believable, even though they are not necessarily, you know, realistic or photographic. There's something very magical about her, the way she captures the Maine landscape.
Yeah. Well, Jamie, thanks so much for calling in and joining us today. That's Jamie Hogan. She's an award-winning illustrator and educator. You know, it's interesting, though. Jamie mentioned porcupines. You were talking about your grumpy bear. I asked Annie MacDonald this question several years ago, and I want to see if you all have the same answer that she did. Why do children's book author illustrators use animals as protagonists?
I do it because they're more fun to draw for me. I mean, there's a classic example of if you just draw a person sitting at a typewriter, you know, that's somewhat interesting. But if you draw an elephant sitting at a typewriter, it's already funny. And I like my books to make kids laugh, so I just, it's a little funnier for me to put people in there. I mean, animals instead of people.
I have yet to do a book with just animal characters, although I did write a story with just animal characters. Didn't really go anywhere yet, but it's in a drawer at home. I have a lot of stories in a drawer at home, but I always put dogs. I mean, a lot of my characters have little sidekick dogs because I can't draw cats.
Right. And, but, you know, this is something that's happened for a long, long time. Winnie the Pooh, all of those are animal characters.
Yeah.
And what Annie said, and I hope I'm remembering this correctly, Annie, because it was a long time ago, but something to the effect of a child that can choose which animal to identify with when he or she reads the book. Doesn't need to be the child who looks like him or her. You know, I feel like that porcupine. I feel like that bear and have a connection that they might not if the characters are drawn to look different than they are.
I think also when you use animals, it can be ambiguous as to whether they're grown-ups or kids.
Mm.
So I think that children can identify with them a little more than if you had a story about they can identify with grown-ups. But if it's a little ambiguous as to whether that bear is a 7-year-old or a 40-year-old, you know.
Right, they have sort of a childlike quality to them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so does Mr. McGee, actually. That's why I think he's successful, because he's like...
He's just a grown kid.
He's just abnormally tall child.
And most children have somebody like that in their
lives.
Yes,
exactly.
So we'll go to Jamie, who's calling from Kennebunkport. Hi, Jamie. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you very much for taking my call. I actually was a classmate of Chris all the way from K through 12.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Jamie. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. Thank you so very much. I actually distinctly remember reading Bert Dow with you in grade school, and when you brought that up, I just a flood of memories. And also the fact that you were such an amazing with art, always, you know, from the very beginning. And I tried to emulate it, and frankly, I was not very good, so I stuck to science. But anyways, the reason I'm calling is I'm interested in to see how careers evolve. And did you always know that you wanted to become a children's author? You know, what was the path that you took there? And same with Ryan as well. You know, how did you end up being where you currently are? Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Jamie. It's nice to hear your voice. I went all through elementary school and high school with Jamie. And you probably remember me drawing on the back of all my papers. That was about the only thing I could do with some success is drawing. And I kept drawing. And Jamie, you might remember I used to do a lot of the posters for the science fair and the concerts and things like that. So when it came time to graduate, I thought that's what I want to pursue. I want to pursue art. So I went to art school thinking I was going to be a college painting professor. That was my goal, but it didn't quite work out. I did take some illustration courses as well as fine art painting courses in college. And then when I got out of school in 1982, which is about 10 years before Ryan was born.
It was one year before I was born.
I did some painting. I did some painting in some gallery shows, but with a young family, I found that illustration paid a lot better. So that's what I did.
Yeah, for me, as a kid, I wanted to grow up to be a comic strip cartoonist. So reading Calvin and Hobbes.
Me too, yeah. Actually. Yeah.
I was kind of set on that career path. That was all I wanted to do until I got into high school, college, and I realized it was really hard to get into the comic strips field. Another big interest of mine was wildlife biology. So when I went to school, I went to College of the Atlantic in Bar Harbor. And I went there because you could study art, writing, science, biology, all those things kind of mixed together. And so I didn't really have to pick or choose, but I decided my backup plan would be I will get a degree where I could be a field biologist. And I went through most of my college career studying mostly science. And then my senior year, we had to pick an internship. And I had a connection with someone who was out west studying grizzly bears. And I also had a small connection with one of the original cartoonists from the Ninja Turtles. And so I had to make this decision. Do I go out west and study grizzly bears, or do I go hang out with this guy, Steve Levine, and draw comics? And I decided to go do the comic thing. And while I was hanging out with him, he was self-publishing a picture book. And I thought that was pretty cool. So when I got done with college, I decided to self-publish my own picture book. And I did a couple self-published books until I wound up kind of going into the more traditional route.
Mm. Well, Jamie, thanks so much for calling with good question. An email from Jean. We all know of Robert McCloskey, E.B. White, Barbara Cooney, and Ashley Bryan. And we also know of many other amazing authors and illustrators. I would like to mention Angeli Pero, the author of Many Hands, a Penobscot Indian story about basket weaving, one of her many wonderful children's books. I'd also like to recommend G.A. Morgan's trilogy, The Five Stones Books, beginning with The Kinfolk. So thanks for that email, Jean. We'll go to Dale, who's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Dale. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just going to share the following. In Cumberland Center, Maine, there's a story walk that shows pictures of children's books through the woods so that you can read, you know, a page every 100 feet or so. And I'm an adult, but Bruce the Bear was one of the most hysterical things I ever read. And it was Bruce the Bear getting imprinted on by three little baby geese. And Bruce was the cartoons were great, the drawing was great. And not only were the kids reading the book, but so were the adults. So that's my comment.
Oh, well, thank you. That's lovely. Yeah, I love those story walks. Were you saying that there was a story walk with Bruce?
Yes, there was a story walk with Bruce, the name of which I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
But it was the one where he keeps trying to get the geese.
Yeah, that's Mother Bruce. That's my first one. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. That's so great to hear.
Yeah, Dale, thanks so much for calling. That's fun that you didn't even know.
I'm very forgetful.
We have a tweet from Nancy. I wonder how many children's book authors started their careers by telling bedtime stories to their own kids. Do you all make up stories for your own kids?
I can jump in on that one. I'm terrible at making up stories on the spot. So I will sit down and try to make up a story for my kids, and I always just have my wife come in and finish it because she's a lot better at making up stories on the spot. She's an elementary school teacher, so she's got that sort of quick brain. I need to sit and think for a very long time over a story. I suppose if I had a month advance notice that my children wanted a bedtime story, I could probably come up with a good one.
I used to tell my kids stories, but they're in their 20s now. But yeah, we used to make up stories before a lot of the time we would just read a story too. Yeah.
A tweet from Deb. Please have Ryan Higgins tell what he did when he couldn't find a publisher for his first book. That story is still told as an example of perseverance and finding another way at Asa C. Adams School in RSU 26.
Oh, Asa Adams. Yeah, yeah. So I've visited Asa Adams a bunch of times when I self-published books. So she's referring to how my first few books were self-published. So, I really wanted to have some books out there. I didn't know much about the traditional publishing world. And instead of looking for publishers or agents, I wound up going directly to printers, and I found a printer that would print a book that I had made. And the first part of my career, I spent driving around Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, just doing school visits and selling books out of the trunk of my car. And Ace Adams was one of my first schools.
Wow, that's wonderful. Before we go to another break, I have an email. Then this is from Jacob, age 8, and Max, age 6. And they want to know how the authors come up with the characters in the book. Are the characters based on real people they know? That's probably a tricky question, isn't it?
Yeah, that can get sticky. I know, so I have a mouse in my book. There's three mice in my Bruce books, and one of them is just me. So Nibs, he's the mouse with the hat. He's just me. Bruce is based loosely on my grandfather and also my wife's grandfather. In the way that kind of stoic on the outside would get into messes that weren't their fault, and you know, but underneath some layers of stoicism, there's a big warm heart.
Did they know that?
Both of them passed away.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
What about you?
Not really. I don't really base them on specific people, although my first character, Mr. McGee, my wife thinks it looks just like my oldest brother. I got a quick funny story. Can I tell you a quick funny story?
Yes.
So he used to work in this office building up in Belfast, and he looked so much like Mr. McGee that people started calling him Mr. McGee at work.
Oh, no.
And so he'd be walking down the hall, and people would say, "Hey, Mr. McGee," and he'd say, "Hey," and it got to be such a thing that young mothers would bring their kids into work, into his office to meet the real, I'm doing air quotes, Mr. McGee. I apologized profusely to my brother. He said, no, it was kind of fun. So
that's wonderful. We are going to take another quick break. We're talking with Chris Van Dusen, the children's book author and illustrator, and also Ryan Higgins, children's book author, illustrator, both award-winning, best-selling. If you have a question for them, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Cumberland Crossing, a new retirement community offering access to Ocean View at Falmouth's Care Continuum. CumberlandCrossingRC.com.
Coming up on the next Commonwealth Club program, it has been more than a half century since George Shultz entered public life, and he has worked on some of the most pressing domestic and international issues facing the United States. Join us for a fascinating conversation with one of America's most respected statesmen on the next Commonwealth Club radio program.
That's coming up today at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
The categories of left and right divide our world.
Exit left.
All the left-handed people.
The left-wing extremism.
A right-wing group.
Far right.
Exit right.
These categories also apply to our brains. How the right and left hemispheres shape our view of the world. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Join us for Hidden Brain Sunday morning at 11.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're learning about the making of children's books, what the profession is like, and how important these books are to children and families. Joining me, Chris Van Dusen. He wrote and illustrated the popular Mercy Watson series, as well as If I Built a Car and the other If I Built books. Ryan Higgins wrote and illustrated the picture book We Don't Eat Our Classmates and the other in the Mother Bruce series. If you join our conversation, it's 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Before we get to the calls, though, I want to ask each of you, what do you aim for in your books, Chris? Are you trying to entertain, to teach a lesson? Is there a hidden moral in many of your stories?
First, just to correct one thing you said, I didn't write the Mercy Watson books.
Oh,
they were
sorry.
Written by Kate DeCamillo.
Oh, so yeah,
I just
that's
wanted
right.
to correct that.
And I didn't know
I did,
that. Sorry. Thank
I did the
you.
Illustration.
Yeah.
You know, when I started writing books, I said, I'm not going to write books with any morals because I thought they tended to be a little bit too preachy. But the older I get, the more I'm finding there's more of a message to my books. And I still want to avoid sort of shoving, some sort of ideal down a kid's throat. I just want them to enjoy the story. But there are some messages in my books. King Hugo's huge ego is all about being being humble, and Hattie and Hudson is all about acceptance, and so there are definitely lessons in my books.
Yeah, I write my books to have fun. So to me, it's just to entertain myself. But I do find after I make them that they were about something. I don't usually sit down with that in mind. But I've noticed a lot of my Mother Bruce books. The first one is, what makes a mother, because right. Bruce is called Mother Bruce, but he's a grumpy old black bear. So and then a couple of the other ones. One of them is Bruce's big move, and that's what makes your home. So what makes where you live? Why is it your home? That sort of thing. And it's more like who's there with you. And then my classmates' book is about treating others as you want to be treated. And again, I don't think about this until afterwards. People tell me usually what my books are about.
And you usually say, sounds good.
Very insightful of you.
that does happen sometimes. I gotta admit, that's happened to me too.
Oh my goodness. We'll go to Sophie, who's calling from York. Hi, Sophie. Go ahead.
Hi, Ryan. Hi, Chris. I don't know if you can hear me. I'm on a road, Highway 1, barreling through the pouring rain. This is Sophie Blackall speaking. I'm also a children's book writer and illustrator.
Wait, did you say Sophie Blackall?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, this is Sophie Blackall. Hey, the famous Sophie Blackall.
Oh my gosh.
For
people who don't know, she's won the Caldecott twice. Sophie, it is such an honor to talk to you.
Yeah, wow.
Well, I was thinking that your ears must have been burning because I just left the Island Readers and Writers Summer Morning in Maine program, and which was on Mount Desert Island in the pouring rain, so it wasn't altogether summery. But for those of you who don't know the Island Readers and Writers, Chris, I know you know them extremely well.
Yes.
Do incredible work in down east Maine, bringing authors and illustrators like us to tiny, remote, underserved schools on islands. I did five of the schools in April, and I know you've done many of those visits as well, and some of the schools have maybe 35 kids in them, and it's an experience that I had never seen before, but it was such a wonderful chance to get to see this bit of Maine and to see this group of people who are so committed to getting books into the hands of children, and because each child leaves with a book, and I was following in your path, Chris, and they were hard shoes to fill.
Oh, jeez, no, I doubt that. but yeah, IRW is a great organization. Jan Coates, who started that, really wanted to bring authors and illustrators at first out to the islands off the coast of Maine. They just don't have any visitors that come out there. And it was they were so hungry for that. The kids would just. It was like something out of The Sound of Music. I remember I went to one school and they all lined up and they stepped forward and told me their name and what grade they were. And it was a one-room school. I mean, it's just amazing. Yeah, it's a great organization. I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm so glad you called in too, Sophie.
Yeah, I've done a couple of visits with them. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's been a few years.
Sophie, so, I want to apologize I'm sorry. I wanted to apologize that the weather's been so lousy. Both times you went to Maine, you were here earlier this year, and it was
in April. Yeah,
it was just solid fog.
I like fog. Yeah, yeah, I'm very fond of fog, so it suited me just fine. We kept driving to Outlooks, and my lovely host would say, "There's a spectacular view here, and there is a lighthouse."
Well, Sophie Blackall, thanks so much for calling in and joining this conversation. Really appreciate it. We're going to move on. We're going to go to Peter in Bangor. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to recommend a book by the great actor Alan Arkin called The Lemming Condition. I don't know if anybody's heard of that.
I'm not familiar with that one.
No. Okay. The Lemming Condition. Yeah, Bubber the Lemming. All the lemmings are going to take a trip and into the sea, and Bubber the Lemming has to decide if he's going to go, and is questioning. Yeah?
That sounds like a great idea.
I could see you illustrating.
Peter, thank you so much for calling in. We'll go to Jean and Castine, who also, I believe, has a recommendation. Hi, Jean. Go ahead.
Sure. Hi. Janet and Alan Ahlberg's Each Peach, Pear Plum.
Oh,
it
love
was
that
my
book.
Children's favorite book, and now it's our grandchildren's favorite book.
Yeah, we used I used to read that to my kids all the time. They love that book. It's a wonderful.
Yeah,
book.
I find myself repeating it myself when nobody's around. So, the other thing, I do have two quick questions. Number one, illustration. I'm an educator, 38 years. I've seen illustrations that seem to be more focused on parents, at least covers, more focused on getting parents' attention than children's attention. I don't know if anybody sees that as a trend. The heavy marketing of some books is just, I feel, over the top. Sure. And then the other thing is, I think while literature is, there's never enough literature for children, for babies, I also think it's important to have well-written, well-illustrated informational texts for children, mm-hmm. science, history, and other things. So I'll take my comment off the air, and thank you for this wonderful program.
Thanks for calling in. Your first question, I know most all publishers have covers meetings.
Yes, I was going to talk about those.
Yeah, and so what we will do as illustrators is we will send in, you know, up to, I don't know, 5-6 different covers. Different concepts for a cover. And then the covers meetings usually involve marketing and promotion people as well as editors. And they decide what's going to make the most striking and, unfortunately, saleable cover, because that's part of the game. So that's the first question. And the second question was, nonfiction books for kids are really important, especially, you know, in the education and schools. Unfortunately, you're talking to the wrong guys here. We make stuff up. We're like a comedy duo here. Yeah.
Gene, thanks so much for your call. We'll go to Tully, who's calling from Westbrook. Hi, Tully. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to make mention of one of my favorite main artists and illustrators, Dolly Ipkar. Mm. And she. There are two books in particular that I found most memorable, Calico Jungle and One Horse Farm. Mm-hmm. One Horse Farm was really, really striking to me. I'm getting into farming now, and I think it was part of my inspiration when I was really little, but it just sort of took you through the whole transition of a main farm from animal draft agriculture to, owning a tractor for the first time and how it changed and how the horse and the boy were born at the same time. You know, and how over time the horse got retired and, and it's just to mention Dolly Ipkar in general. And if any of you have any like particular memories meeting her or, she just passed a few years ago and I just thought I'd make mention of her today. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned her. She was definitely a legend. And I did have the opportunity to meet her a couple times and she was just so gracious and such a lovely person and just unbelievably talented. Yeah.
I had the advantage of interviewing her a few times, and one time she was going to appear at the Portland Museum of Art, and I took my son, who I believe at the time was very small, maybe three, and she and he were smitten with each other. It was as though everybody else disappeared. You know, her focus on children was so intensive. So, Tully, I'm so glad you called and mentioned Dolly Ipkar, one of, Maine's great not just artists, but great people. So thank you for that. We'll go to Richard, who's calling from Sebago Lake. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Hi. Great show. One thing I'd like to quickly add is if you have any children or grandchildren, read to them.
Mm-hmm.
I started reading to my son before he could even talk.
Absolutely.
And when he was in kindergarten, they did a play called The Gingerbread Man. And he had to be the narrator because he was the only one who could read.
Good for him. That's great.
Well, Richard, thanks so much for... Go ahead.
But one other quick story. He's 35 now. He recently came home. My wife had passed away, and we were going through all the old pictures. And we ran across one of his favorite books as a child called Pat the Bunny.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with that. The woman who answered my call remembers it.
Sure, and, Pat the Bunny had texture.
Had fur and sandpaper and all the little different textures.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Richard, thanks for calling. And, you know, him mentioning Pat the Bunny makes me think of a question, and maybe I'll even end with this question, because it seems as though some of the most popular children's books throughout history, whether it's Pat the Bunny or Goodnight Moon or something like that, seem very, very simple. But my guess is that with so many things, like so many things in life, the easier it seems, the harder it really is.
Absolutely.
Is that the case with children's book author, being an author and illustrator?
Yeah, I think that's the goal. You know, the goal is to put in so much work that it seemed easy to do.
Yeah, and when you really think about what an author or illustrator have to achieve in, you know, 32 pages, is quite a bit. And you have to, you know, introduce character, conflict, the whole thing, and yet you have to keep it to as little few words as possible.
Right, try to stick to like 500 words or less. Yeah. You know,
is that the guidance, 32 pages, 500 words?
Well, books are usually printed in sheets of 8 pages. That's called signature. So it's usually a multiple of 8. Usually 32 pages. A lot of books in there are 40, 48 pages, like that. Yeah.
Do you start with a lot more and cull? Is that your process?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the main part of my editor's job is shrinking my story down.
It's not your job. It's your editor's job.
Yeah, well, I throw in so many jokes, and mostly it's just cutting out jokes that don't work.
They love that. Yeah. They love to cut your lines.
Yeah, absolutely. It's called. It's a phrase in the industry called killing your little darlings. So have you heard that before, Chris? My agent talks about this all the time. So a little darling is a part of the story or a joke you have in there. Even though it doesn't fit, you just have it in there because it's your little darling and you love that little part. But if it doesn't progress the plot along, you have to kill your little darlings.
That's like so anti-children's book, though, that phrase. Jeez, what a bummer.
Greg asks, and this is going to be a big question for just a little bit of time left, do the times affect how we appreciate past books, like in a PC way? I'm thinking of two books in particular. One I dislike immensely, the other I still love. He's not saying which is which. The Giving Tree and the Mrs. Pigglewiggle series. Do people still read them, or are they both too inappropriate for the times?
Oh, I think, well, I don't know the Mrs. I think I read them, but I don't remember those as much. But I do, The Giving Tree, I think, is still very popular and immensely sad.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, what a depressing book.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the first one either, but The Giving Tree is, I read that quite a bit as a child.
Yeah. I mean, it's wonderful, but it's so sad.
But I think there is, you know, with PC stuff, I mean, that's sort of something that's happening in all media. In all industries right now with just being careful with what stories are being made and being more thoughtful of the wide audience.
Sure. Absolutely.
Well, that's going to be our last word. What a fun show. Thank you both for making the trek here. The voice you just heard, Ryan Higgins, an award-winning author and illustrator. His newest book is Bruce's Big Storm. And Chris Van Dusen, also an award-winning author and illustrator. His latest book, If I Built a School, comes out next week. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. This program will be on again tonight at 8. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.